8, pero nunca enfocó la raíz de la crisis previa.
Dodd-Frank says that the next time
las transacciones financieras conocidas en la bolsa bursátil como derivados fue la causa principal del colapso anterior. Estas no solo han continuado, sino que ahora son mayores. Hoy día, dice Brown, el mercado de derivados es 10 veces mayor, algunos dicen 20 veces mayor, que el Producto Nacional Bruto de todos los países del mundo juntos. Los derivados son, en esencia, apuestas en las que los protagonistas manipulan y hacen negocios con las deudas.
They have come up with a new plan, which is called the bail-in.
La reconocida escritora señala que el Banco de International Settlements de Suiza ha instruido a los bancos del mundo que preparen medidas para otro colapso. El grupo de los 20, incluyendo los Estados Unidos, ya quedaron de acuerdo que si ocurre otro colapso, los bancos echarán mano del dinero depositado por el público. Añade que la mayoría de la gente piensa que el dinero que tiene en su cuenta bancaria es de ellos, cuando que en realidad, al llegar al banco, se convierte en propiedad del mismo banco y el depositante se convierte en acreedor de la institución bancaria. George Riley es anfitriona del programa radial The Power Hour y portavoz de la Asociación de Veteranos de la Guerra del Golfo.
Why are they all buying munitions? To the point of weapons and ammunition.
Ella se pregunta por qué las agencias del gobierno están comprando millones de balas. ¿Qué es lo que pasa? Añade que no habrá mucho terrorismo en Estados Unidos, sino más bien el pueblo estará harto de la situación actual.
People need to have 6 weeks of food. You really do.
Riley sugiere que todo el mundo se prepare con provisiones de alimentos suficientes para 6 semanas. La gente debe tener lo suficiente para cocinar afuera de su casa, dice, hervir agua y tener lo básico de primeros auxilios médicos.
There's a lot of good books. A guy named Matt Stein has written a really good book.
Entonces Riley sugiere que la gente tenga suficiente comida guardada y dentro del marco legal que se arme para su protección, porque cuando llega el caos, cada persona tiene que estar lista para cuidarse a sí misma y a sus seres queridos. Para las personas interesadas en su sobrevivencia, Riley sugiere que lean los libros Atrévete a estar preparado de Holly Drennan Dale y Cuando fracasa la tecnología de Matt Stein. En Los Ángeles, yo soy Fernando Velázquez.
A world run by a handful of greedy bankers and CEOs who nobody elected can't possibly last.
Los invitamos a visitar nuestra página blog en pueblosinfronteras.wordpress.com, donde podrá opinar y encontrar más detalles sobre las noticias de Estados Unidos, América Latina y el mundo desde una perspectiva progresista. En Estados Unidos entra en su 10º día la parálisis parcial del gobierno federal porque el Congreso no ha aprobado nuevo presupuesto. Los republicanos exigen que se derogue o desfinancie la ley de salud para asignar gastos al gobierno. La nueva ley sanitaria ofrece subsidios a personas de bajos recursos para ayudarlos a comprar un seguro médico privado, pero deja fuera a millones de trabajadores y sus familias. Aiza García con la información.
Como muchos en Estados Unidos, Caroline Mandet tiene 2 empleos. De esta cafetería sale apurada al siguiente trabajo. Dice que aún así no le alcanza el dinero, por tanto, no puede pagarse un seguro de gastos médicos.
Nunca he tenido cobertura médica. Lo que gano en 2 sitios no me alcanza para pagar un seguro, ni siquiera el Obamacare. Vivo para trabajar y poder pagar lo de mis hijos, las rentas, las facturas, los impuestos.
Otros han tenido mejor suerte y aún así buscarán ahorrar al contratar uno de los seguros subsidiados que ofrece el Obamacare.
Yo pago mi seguro privado y me cuesta cada mes cerca de $600. Creo que con el Obamacare se me abren otras opciones para la cobertura médica que evaluaré.
La reforma sanitaria, conocida como Obamacare, entró en vigor el 1 de octubre y se convirtió en el eje del conflicto presupuestal entre republicanos y demócratas.
El cierre parcial del gobierno no ha sido por un tema de gastos ni de corresponsabilidad. Todo esto se debe a una sola cosa: a la obsesión de los republicanos por desmantelar la reforma sanitaria que daría seguro médico a millones de norteamericanos.
No podemos seguir gastando el dinero que no tenemos y pasar la deuda a nuestros hijos y a sus hijos. No se trata de mí o de los republicanos, sino de salvar el futuro de nuestros hijos y de sus hijos.
Pero el debate sobre la ley sanitaria también está en las calles.
Estados Unidos necesitaba hace rato un sistema de salud que ampliara la cobertura médica. ¿De qué sirve como país tener buenos médicos si no todos pueden tener acceso a ellos por falta de recursos? El sistema que estaba antes del Obamacare era muy injusto.
Y los republicanos obviamente no se dan cuenta y no aceptan una cosa. La derrota que tuvieron en las elecciones de noviembre con la reelección de Obama se ratificó que el pueblo estadounidense quería esta ley de salud pública.
Y es que enfermarse en Estados Unidos es un lujo que pocos pueden costear. Y con la polémica ley de salud asequible, conocida como Obamacare, podrían tener acceso a cobertura médica universal unos 26 millones de estadounidenses, de un total de 47 millones que nunca han podido tenerla. Aiza García, Telesur, Washington.
La democratización de la tierra es un tema que se debate tanto en Cuba en los diálogos de paz entre la guerrilla de las FARC con el gobierno colombiano como en la misma nación sudamericana. Paul Bacaret se explica la situación de millones de colombianos que han sido despojados de sus tierras.
En medio de seminarios que promueven organizaciones sociales y académicos para hablar de la concentración, despojo de tierras y desarrollo rural, defensores de derechos humanos denuncian que la penetración de empresas multinacionales y privadas sigue desplazando.
We're back on the stream. Very good. So welcome again to Bathrop Spears Broadsides. I'm Robert Norris. We're going to be covering a number of things tonight. We're going to be talking about the last protest against the sidewalk snatchers, the downtown ordinances that make 95% of the sidewalks unusable for virtually everybody who isn't walking to a store or standing. We're going to be talking about the Sanctuary Campground. There's a meeting tonight, if you're listening to this, on the 10th of October, Thursday, at the Santa Cruz High School, where from, I guess, 7 to 9 or thereabouts, Brent Adams Sanctuary Camp is going to be the subject of a panel discussion, and we may get a call-in from the folks on that. We had quite an encounter at the last Sunday protest, what's it called, Fun Day Frolics, where a host, one of the hospitality squad, came up and started, screaming and threatening one of the activists because she was recording her as the host spoke to her about her situation regarding a hopscotch matrix on the sidewalk, which the host called graffiti, and then got very angry with Becky Johnson. And Becky may or may not be coming into the studio or calling in. She might be calling in. She's, of course, a longtime activist with Huff and other groups around town, and I'm really grateful to her for taking the really coherent, if passionate, stand that she did with this abusive, out-of-control host, which really is part of an abusive, out-of-control hospitality program that is masterminded from another state. I don't know whether it's Michigan or Pennsylvania. It's you can't even get into their offices. They're locked on Front Street. At least that's what one of our activists found out when he went down there. So we're going to be listening to more about that. I'll begin the show, though, as I have been beginning it recently, with a little music, something familiar to those of you who are longtime listeners. Actually, you know, maybe what I'll do is play something a little unfamiliar to kind of, I don't know if it's going to spice it up or send everybody home in a nostalgic daze, but let's see what I got here. Let's see if we can... Here's a little Peter, Paul, and Mary on the sort of political side. Again, we're talking older songs from an older guy, so that's probably what you'd expect, and that's what you're getting here. So let's see if we can work that one out. I think we might be able to. Let's see how it goes here. Don't go away. Maybe it is time to at least, if not go away. Ah, yes. I must always be a little cautious about tapes. Sorry, that. I guess what we'll do is, I guess we'll rely on... Here we are. My apologies for the slow start. Here we go.
Was it Cesar Chavez or Rosa Parks that day? Some say Dr. King or Gandhi that set them on their way. No matter who your mentors are, it's pretty plain to see that if you've been to jail for justice, you're in good company. Have you been to jail for justice? I want to shake your hand. 'Cause sitting in and lying down are ways to take a stand. Have you sung a song for freedom or marks that picket line? Have you been to jail for justice? Then you're a friend of mine.
Hey, you law-abiding citizens, come listen to this song. Laws are made by people, and people can be wrong. Once unions were against the law, but slavery was fine. Women were denied the vote while the children wrote the mine. Yeah,
the more you study history, the less you can deny it.
Say a rotten law stays on the books, still folks with guts defy it.
Have you been to jail for justice? I want to shake your hand. 'Cause sitting in line, take a stand. Have you sung for marks that picket line? Have you been to jail for justice? Then you're a friend of mine.
Well, the law's supposed to serve us, so are the police. But when the system fails, it's up to us to speak our peace.
We must be ever vigilant for justice to prevail.
So get courage from your convictions, let them haul you off to jail.
Have you been to jail for justice? I want to shake your hand. 'Cause sitting in and lying down and ways to take a stand. Have you sung a song for freedom or marks that picket line? Have you been to jail for justice? Then you're a friend of mine. Have you been to jail for justice?
Have you been to jail for justice?
Have you been to jail for justice? Then you're a friend of mine.
And that's kind of an appropriate song to begin with. It's an old favorite. I played it sung by Ann Feeney, I believe. She did a great job of it. And, of course, so did Peter, Paul, and Mary. And it's becoming more and more relevant for some activists in Santa Cruz around the downtown ordinance struggle that is coming up again this weekend, or actually any day and any night when the hosts, security guards, and police are roaming the mall, enforcing the 95% sterility zone laws that currently enforce and are going to even get worse on October 24th when the latest changes from the Santa Cruz City Council hit the pavement, hit the sidewalk, hit the blacktop. And there'll be also a protest coming up this weekend called the Tour of Shame, which actually we've talked about doing for the last couple of protests but haven't done. It has particular pertinence this coming Sunday at 1:30, where we'll be in front of the Everlovin' Forever 21 store, which is at SoCal and Pacific, right across from New Leaf Market in downtown Santa Cruz, because last Sunday an angry host started screaming obscenities and threats at one of our activist members. And that was caught on video. That was put out on a number of websites. And it's garnered at least 100 comments, if you start totaling up all the comments from the different websites. I posted it on the Santa Cruz Indie Media. I'm going to play a little of the audio a bit later, but it's not hard to access. It's all over the place. If you look up Hostility Santa Cruz, Hospitality Squad Santa Cruz, Hostilipitality Squad, you'll find it if you just use a browser engine. It's not hard to locate. Although perhaps, many of you may be listening to this, or some of you may be listening to this whole thing on a day beyond October 10th, 2013, which is the day it's being recorded. If you are here listening on the 10th, please consider calling in if you have any thoughts on what you're hearing or on what you've experienced or any updates or news you want to pass on. The number here is 831-427-3772, 831-427-3772. And phone lines are open, I think, and the ringers are on, and so I will be advised of anything. Tonight, in case you're listening to it on that date, there's also a 7 o'clock, as I've mentioned before, Sanctuary Campground meeting, which is happening. Last night there was a meeting of the Public Hysteria Task Force, or the Public Safety Task Force, as Mayor Bryant, I'm sure, would like to refer to it. They had a public comment section, and it was mentioned in the paper. I'll be looking at that briefly, kind of commenting on the article in the Sentinel. I wasn't there, so I can't give a lot of new input other than my general reaction, which was not, of course, generally positive to that group. But and the article itself didn't give me any reason for encouragement. I'm going to begin, though, with some interviews that often make up the bulk of this show. They're interviews from the street or from feedings at Food Not Bombs or the Calvary Episcopal Church, the Red Church, or other places where I ran into people, ask them their opinions on certain topics, mostly having to do with how they're treated by police, sheriffs, security guards, hosts, merchants, things like that. And other experiences, too. But particularly, that's kind of been my focus because sometimes I get positive responses. Most usually I don't. Or if I do, you know, I kind of, there's not too much to talk about. I mean, we mention it. And, you know, we particularly if a police officer has been particularly helpful or something, that's nice. But the real problem is the system of policing that sets up a set of laws that allows the rich as well as the poor to sleep under bridges, beg in the streets, and do things like that. In other words, it has the appearance of equality, but the reality of absolute inequality. It's class legislature in Santa Cruz, masquerading as public safety, or you know, some kind of response to the war on drugs. More police, more jails, more controls, more cutbacks on services that poor people need, and more attacks on counterculture people, alcoholics, drug addicts, folks who are termed mental illness cases, travelers. It's generally, there's been a very kind of xenophobic process happening here. And it's discouraging, it's depressing, it's infuriating in some ways. But let's begin with some interviews, and then we'll move to any phone calls, or possibly I'm expecting a guest or two to come into the studio, but that may or may not happen. It's a little problematic these days, so we'll see what happens. If you do want to check out the Sanctuary Campground, you can. There isn't such a thing right now, but there is a lot of advertising for it, a lot of organizing by Brent Adams and Stacy and others who are working on that. And that's going to be happening tonight at the Santa Cruz High School at 415 Walnut Street. And you can check that out in the main auditorium up there starting at 7. I guess the third time I've said it. So, Brent, you can pass me that $5 you promised me. Actually, no, he didn't offer me anything, and I'm glad to publicize that kind of discussion. We'll see how that works.
Well, it's September 23rd, 2013. I'm here at the Red Church on the sidewalk, and I'm talking with
Brad. And I've been out here 17 years, and I'm getting a little tired of how much police are being in the parks lately. You know, it's like we're not out there to destroy the parks. We're out there just to relax and have fun, and they're eyeballing us like we're criminals every time we just go to lay down. And I don't think that's right. So,
hey, thank you, Brad. Any hassles yourself this last week?
Not myself, but, you know, harassed a lot of my friends, you know, and a couple people even went to jail over just trying to sleep, you know.
When did that happen?
As a matter of fact, once this morning. One girl that, you know, she's been around here her whole life, you know, and just went to go to bed in the park, you know, and, you know, all of a sudden, you know, she's off to jail, you know, so.
Do you get an idea why she was being jailed?
That I don't really know, you know. And I actually left right before she got picked up. But when I left, she was just sleeping, you know, so I don't think that's right, you know. Like, I've been harassed for just sleeping, too, you know. They say you're drunk, they say you're high or something, and you're really not. You're just going there, you know, because maybe it was a cold night and you didn't get good sleep that night, you know. And they harass you, that's all.
And we've been talking with who?
Okay, yeah, thanks, I'm Brad, and, you know, just, yeah, that's my, you know, just opinion on what's going on lately is, you know, we're growing up, you know, we know how to handle ourselves in a park, you know, just, we're not there to harass anybody, we're there just to relax.
Thank you, Brad. Today is, it's about 5:30 on September
23rd, actually. And that actually is a repeat. I played that, I think it was last week, and so we're going to skip ahead. Although the same kind of things are going on. Here's some more recent stuff from the end of September. It looks like September 30th. And let's hear it. And hopefully we'll hear it very shortly. Very, very shortly.
So I'm having an anonymous report here at the Red Church. It is October, no, it's still September 30th, about 6 o'clock, and nice evening here. Shadows are lengthening. But a man is telling me that difficult experiences by getting ticketed back-to-back one day after another by Officer Azua, and then getting the gratuitous comment that if you were there the next day, actually it was a different place, I guess, if he was ticketed again for the crime of sleeping, he would be served McDonald's hamburgers and then served into jail. This apparently was with a number of other people as well that all got citations. How many were there?
The only one actually arrested with a dog because I had to start a job.
And you were arrested with a dog. You also,
I was ticketed with the dog that I was sleeping with.
You were ticketed, what's the name of the dog? You want to keep that to yourself? Confidential dog. And,
Mighty Dog is his name.
Mighty Dog, excellent. And so you also, you spent the weekend in jail for another, because of another citation? Or?
No. I was in there for a brief amount of time for a different incident.
Another incident. And your food stamp card was confiscated. You spent some time trying to persuade authorities at the police station to...
I looked into it.
Get access to the food card because you had to get a job.
You had a job you had to get to, but the hours did not allow that to happen. Police station restricted hours, and in spite of all your pleas.
Getting a report that at Loudoun Nelson, you now need a key to use the bathroom, as well as you need to leave your backpack at the desk.
Yes. Once again, Santa Cruz, the town that can't even run a fucking bathroom, has closed down another bathroom. Well, it's essentially open, but you need a key to get in, and you have to leave your backpack or any bags at the desk in order to use the bathroom.
You mentioned a woman named Rachel is involved.
I think she's the manager. She said it was her own decision, wasn't a meeting or something. She said there'd been some police incidents or something, and she needed to protect the teens there. So.
Protect the teens, I see.
No, it's maybe Dylan Greiner had set up a peeper operation there for Take Back Santa Cruz or something. We don't really know, but it's affecting anyone with a backpack now.
Thank you, Free. Sorry to hear it.
And the word I got from Skidmark Bob Duran, who works at Loudoun Nelson, was that, as I think I mentioned on the air before, that there is a... some sort of needles clogging up the toilets problem. Although, again, getting the specifics of these incidents in terms of the number of them, how frequent are they, whether there's been an increase in them, so we can judge whether this is an unusual policy or a regular policy that happens when these kind of problems come up, or one that's prompted by the right-wing drug war, homeless get-out-of-town mentality. It's hard to tell. Skidmark Bob is not an anti-homeless guy. He's been homeless himself. He's been a strong and outspoken advocate for homeless people a decade or two ago. And I don't think he has, you know, necessarily pulled in his horns that much. So he's a regular worker and a father. So he has that kind of impact, his ability to let it all hang out. At least that would be my impression. But he claims that, you know, no one's excluded. This has to do only with the men's bathroom. as I understand it, and it's a policy that he supports, but he didn't initiate. I talked again with other people who claim that it's not something that helps folks, particularly those who have to go use the bathroom quickly, and to go through a sort of a unpacking process where you don't have free access to the bathroom can cause you to go wee-wee in the hee-hee, so to speak, if you're an older person, for instance. And I don't know that some other people have said that the bathrooms are sometimes open at Loudoun Nelson, that this only happens at certain times at night. So it's not really clear to me what exactly is going on there. I haven't staked out the bathrooms at Loudoun Nelson Center. But it's really kind of interesting that this kind of thing is happening as a response to, and the question is, a response to what? I mean, if there's suddenly five times as many drains clogged up, or twice as many drains clogged up, or people overdosing in the bathroom on an even irregular basis, I suppose that wouldn't, that would be the basis for at least some kind of pseudo-rational explanation, at least. I mean, I don't know if I agree with their solution, but that would be a good reason for, at least considering some kind of response. But we don't have that yet. And I'm not saying it's being turned away or denied us. I just haven't yet done the research or done the interview. I'm hoping perhaps before Sunday I can get that kind of information, but I am kind of running around in 1,000 different directions, and so I may not have that info. But if anybody has information on the Loudoun Nelson bathrooms, that's whether for the senior center or teen meetings or Narcotics Anonymous or any of the other groups that meet in the Loudoun Nelson Center, please let me know. I'm at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. I'd like to know what the real shit is, so to speak.
So, you were saying that your social worker told you to go back to Arcata for housing? Or?
Well, yeah, I was homeless in Arcata for 6 months. I was born and raised in Santa Cruz. I've seen you forever. And I have social worker Lynn at the HBHB, and she said, there's no HUD here. Now that you can buy house, now that you have Social Security, do you want to go back to Arcata? Because you could apply for HUD there, and then it would be a third of your rent. You'd have more money. So the point is, it's a good point. It's $600 in my pocket versus $200. I only have $200 in this town because my rent's $650. So the point is she telling me to get out of town or suggesting it politely?
Very politely. We're trying to be very polite with you guys. Get the fuck... please get the fuck out of town. And we've been talking with... Thank you. Now, what's your name?
I'm Elijah.
Go ahead, Elijah.
You know the spot up there by Costco's where a lot of the homeless park?
All right.
Well, I got a ticket there for $48.
How long ago?
Well, it was about a week ago. I'm definitely going to protest it. The dude said, they told us to come by here all the time. You know, I was parked there and walked down to the center and came right back in something like maybe about 10 minutes, and I had a ticket.
What was the ticket for?
Parking in an unrestricted area.
And what way was it restricted?
I don't know. But you could see the unrestricted sign there where I parked at.
And you were in a homeless-looking vehicle?
I was in a vehicle. Yeah, that's my work van.
We don't allow your kind around here.
Well, I'm sorry to say. Sorry to hear that. But I got a ticket, and I was going about 10 minutes, wasn't I? We came back up there, and I had a ticket. I just came down to go and get her after getting off from work.
Ain't it the shit?
I have parked downtown and omitted putting a dime in there or a quarter in there for an hour or something. I never get a ticket, but I got a ticket right there. So they are.
No sign posted?
I didn't see the sign. It's posted further around.
And what time of day were you parked there?
Well, it was about 3 o'clock.
Are you blocking anything?
No.
Where exactly was it?
It's right there. What is that? Coral Street, at the end of Coral Street. When you turn there at, what's that boundary there? Yeah.
Coral Street where Costco is.
Yeah.
We've been talking with...
Huh?
Elijah.
Yes, Elijah.
Anything else you want to say, Elijah?
Well, I'm going to contest the ticket because I don't think I deserve it. I pay my taxes, and I try to be a good boy, which I'm not.
yeah, sounds like part of the increasing crackdown. All right. Thank you.
All I got to say.
Any comments on this? You were there when the tickets.
I went to pick you up.
You were there when the tickets happened, more or less?
Yeah, he was just picking me up. He went back and there was a ticket.
So you're a dangerous woman to pick up, apparently.
Right.
Thank you.
And, you know, I'm not familiar with the place where Elijah parked, although I kind of have a vague notion. It's where Coral Street intersects the next street parallel to Highway 9 as you head toward Costco's. And, I don't know what the exact signage is there. But I know that throughout Santa Cruz, the increase in the number of no parking areas, particularly no parking at night areas when there's nobody parking there anyway, or at least nobody needing the spots, but it's deliberately designed to make it inhospitable to homeless people who have no housing but their vehicles, has increased markedly. I don't have the stats on that, but that's been my impression. And, again, it's part of this nationwide criminalization effort, which you might say, well, it's nationwide, it's national. Got to stop at a state level with a homeless bill of rights. And then there's nothing wrong with trying to do that. But where the power is coming from locally is here. Santa Cruz City Council being pressured by groups like Needle Free Zone, Santa Cruz Neighbors, Santa Cruz Police Department, the conservative staff of the Santa Cruz City Council, Downtown Association, Downtown Hosts, you name it, those groups. And therefore, our real counter pressure has to be there. And that's why it's healthy to assert your rights in the sense that it's kind of liberating. It encourages other people to do the same. It's really essential to the maintenance of a democratic society. It's not something that other people are going to do for you generally. And that it can be hard to do, too, and we have to find new creative and strong ways of doing it. One way that I and others do it, as regular listeners I'm sure know, is through this kind of impromptu protests we hold. And we've been holding them the last 3 weeks downtown on Pacific Avenue, generally on Sunday, and I think one was on Saturday night, in front of Forever 21, because the Forever 21 sidewalk is broad. It has nothing to do with the store of Forever 21. It used to be Borders Books. It has to do with the fact that that's one of the places where you can actually, you're not constricting pedestrian traffic. But though much of what we're doing will be illegal on the 24th. And as I said before, remarkably enough, there will be no place to play music, no place to sit down on the sidewalk, no place to peacefully hold up a "We'll work for food" sign, no place to show your art, no place to vend your crafts between the blocks, throughout the entire block that begins with New Leaf and ends with Taqueria Vallarta at the other end, if you're familiar with the block between Cathcart and Soquel. And it's not like there are that many spaces now. There aren't. But there'll be even less when we, well, there'll be zero spaces, pretty much, for performers. There might be a space or two on the Logos side of the street, might. But one or two or three at most. On the other side of the street, as far as I could see when we and I walked it, nothing left. Because the new 14-foot setbacks, the requirement that you be 14 feet from kiosk, building, trash container, which is an expansion. It used to be only trash compactors. Now it's trash containers. Crosswalks, open-air cafes, telephone, directory signs, you name it. It's essentially excludes almost all the space and lets people fight for or compete for or crowd into the rest of the space. So that's been said many times. Let's hear some more interviews, and maybe we'll see you on Sunday when we will be doing the tour of shame, going to the different places, showing where the space had been, where it's disappeared, and also a bit of historic sort of discussion of what has happened in the past in Santa Cruz at different points where people did have successful civil liberties fights, where there was notorious police or host or first alarm security abuse. Should be interesting. That's going to be 1:30 on Sunday, the 13th of October, in front of Forever 21.
So, we're talking with
Kelly Morrissey.
Kelly, you have a concern about the what I call the homeless lack of services center?
Yes, I do.
What is that?
Well, for 2 months there's been no phone, so people can't get a hold of their families or relatives or people that they love, take care of maybe bills or medical issues. There's no clothing. They haven't had clothing for now 2 months. They say it's because if there's been an outbreak of bed bugs, but I don't believe bed bugs live on just plain clothes. I think they like to live off people.
Uh-huh.
And I feel like there's a lot of staff living there that get a paycheck, but they won't let women that are on their own and feel a little scared sleep on the premises, but they'll let other people stay there.
I see. How long have you been around Santa Cruz yourself?
I used to come here as a kid and worked, and then I went away and became a chef. But when I was in a car accident about a month and a half ago, I had to come back. I came back here, and I didn't know what else to do.
And you're outside. Are you inside or outside? So, again, we're talking with
Kelly Morrissey.
And Kelly, you say, are you actually using the services out there such as they exist? Or?
Not really. The shower every day, but I sleep outside.
And what's the story for you outside? Yes, you got a doggy with you.
Yeah.
Are you sleeping in a group or alone?
Alone. Alone.
And how is that?
It gets a little spooky. I got spooked a couple nights ago, and I went back there, and they kicked me out.
Where was this?
At the homeless service center.
And why were you kicked out?
They said that there's no homeless allowed to sleep on the premises outside on the cement.
Of course.
And they're building a fence. They came to measure the other day for $47,000 to keep, I guess, us out, the homeless out. Which...
Well, naturally, you want to keep the homeless out of the homeless lack of services
right.
Center so they wouldn't expose the lack of services. Right?
Exactly. It seems like that.
How are the police treating it?
I actually got a ticket coming on the Greyhound here. I went and got a cup of coffee, and it's about 6:30 in the morning, and I had a cup of coffee, and I was sitting outside Surf Rider Cafe on a chair. The cop pulled up and asked for my driver's license. I gave it to him. I was fine. I didn't have anything wrong, and he gave me a ticket for trespassing.
Where was supposedly you trespassing?
Outside sitting on a chair of Surf Rider Cafe.
Did he ask you to leave?
No.
He just gave you a ticket for trespassing?
Sitting there, yeah.
Well, contested in court.
I am. I'm going to.
Go to court. I mean, the trouble is there's a pain in the ass. You got to run all the way over there, but they have to ask you to leave at least before they do that.
No, he didn't.
And you were there. Did you purchase the coffee there?
Not there. No.
Had they complained and told you to leave?
No.
Did they look outside the window with a fearful looks at your nasty, angry dog there?
No, they didn't.
Well, your dog is how big?
No, she's about 12 pounds.
What's her name?
Bailey.
It's a rather dangerous-looking pooch.
She's cute as hell.
Well, I encourage you to come to the Huff meeting on Wednesday. There's free coffee, 11:30 or 11 o'clock in the morning at the Sub Rosa Cafe.
I'd love to.
Yeah, feel free to come.
Okay.
And remember to Huff.
And actually, Kelly did come, and she explained further that this trespass ticket she got was for sitting in the chairs that are in the kind of triangular, well, three cafe area where Surfrider Cafe, the Chinese-Japanese buffet, and the Greek restaurant all converge, which is sort of at the intersection of Front Street and Cathcart. People may know that area. She had just gotten in on the bus, she explained to me, from another city, and she sat down there, and the police immediately came up. Everything was closed, and they just gave her a ticket for trespass. They didn't warn her that she should leave. They didn't tell her that, you know, that alert her to attention to a sign that said you can't sit down there. It's just an example to me of the, I think it's illegal to do that. You don't make an arrest for someone without giving them the option to leave, at least in any trespass arrest I've ever heard about. They may claim if there's a posted sign and it's very visible, maybe that would not apply. But usually, the owner or the owner's agent, in this case the police officer, has to ask the person to leave. It depends on the specific code statute. But it tends to me to show this really nasty atmosphere that has descended on Santa Cruz, this new kind of get-them-out-of-town imperative. We have one of the people that probably should have been sent out of town long ago. That's our guest for the evening, Dennis Etler, who is... Who's here in the studio with us. Dennis, sign in, say hi, and tell us how things are going. You've got to be within about 2 inches of the mic, though, or
okay,
it'll be hard
hello,
to hear
hello.
You.
Get for having me.
Yeah, get closer. Pull that mic closer so they can...
Okay, there we go.
As best as you can, you know, move those things over there. That's good.
How's that?
Say something.
Well, here I am.
That's good. That's good. Okay. Sounds good. So I'm going to play a little bit more. At any point, you know, feel free to make comments. I'll be turning down mics so we can listen more closely to the actual taped stuff. And then we're going to go directly into the protest that happened last Sunday at the Fun Day Frolics, as I call them, which is the thing in front of Forever 21, which ultimately, I guess the most dramatic point was where a host who may have been named Denise Miller, we're still not entirely clear, but it's can't quite get confirmation on that. They are keeping their identities a closely guarded secret. Assaulted Becky Johnson, by the which I mean threatened her, cursed her, spoke down to her from a position of higher up on the sidewalk in an angry and threatening tone. Becky felt threatened, and then we tried to file a police complaint. I guess the cop took a report. He did not take the complaint in the sense of a citizen's arrest, which I think he should have done. But we'll talk about that. But first, let's hear a little more of this, your phone calls, which, of course, have been rolling in, 427-3772. Actually, we haven't really gotten any phone calls yet. But, hey, the evening is sort of young. Sort of young, you know.
Scott, looking for a ticket from, looks like, the 28th of September for Ren Kelly, who I just spoke to. Trespassing infraction, 429 Front Street. Officer Bell, it looks like, 147. Seems like a phony ticket to me. You were saying a moment ago, repeat what you just said. So we're talking with...
This is Roach.
And again, that ticket by Bell was the trespass ticket for Kelly, who presumably Huff may actually check the situation out in court. I'm not quite sure whether this is going to be an infraction or a misdemeanor. If it's a misdemeanor, she gets a jury trial, and she also gets a public defender. I suspect they're going to try to pawn off some cheesy infraction code on her, which means she won't get either of those things, but just get a hefty fine from sausage maker Kim Basket, or Basket Case Basket, as I call the commissioner, in the basement of the courthouse. So there.
I can tell you a lot of stuff. They have enough money in that shelter to go ahead and build a gate around that SOB, and we can only be on that property if we have a reason to be there. Therefore, either doing laundry or taking a shower or pooing. Yes. And if we can't be there and we can't be out in the freaking public, what the hell?
Get out of town, sweetheart.
Yeah, good luck with that. I'm not going anywhere.
You're here. Well, show up at the Huff meeting at Wednesday at 11 o'clock. Show up at the protest, and if you want to come to the talk about it on the air or on the stream Thursday evenings, I do a radio show. Talk to me about it by phone or arrange it now.
Fabulous. I'm going to make a sign. I'm going to protest.
Thank you.
And Roach did show up at two Huff meetings and may well be at the Sanctuary Campground meeting tonight distributing flyers.
No, I'm not going on radio.
So I did actually I just have a conversation with a woman who told me that her thoughts on this were that good manners from both sides were a good way to go. Does that pretty much sum it up?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Kindness from both sides.
Kindness is good. Kindness is good, for sure.
Shutting down the government.
We have a man who's... Well, we know about that. What about local reports? Anything happening to you on the street you wish to comment on?
Well, I'm looking for an overnight stay here so I can make a doctor's appointment at Planned Parenthood. And
you're not pregnant, are you?
Not yet.
Okay, well, we want to keep an eye on that. That could be an unusual event.
Oh, it's like a male calico cat, you know, worth more than that.
Well, I see you have your suitcase with you. Are you just newly arrived in town?
Oh, always. I've been homeless most of my life, and it's just I was one of the original.
In Santa Cruz or elsewhere?
Oh, all over. Yeah, the Bay Area.
How long have you been here?
Oh, Santa Cruz? Oh, 30-ish years. You know, from Berkeley to Los Gatos and then Monterey and back and bouncing around.
You're a traveling man.
Yeah, I'm a Bay Area rapid transit. Yeah, my name is Bart, so, you know, it all fits.
Fair enough, Bart. Anything that's happened to you in Santa Cruz you want to comment on?
Well, it seems that it's better than Costa Rica, where I just escaped from. I thought I was escaping from here to there, but then I realized I better get the hell back here. And look for
the... Did you come back overland?
Oh, no, I took a jet, yeah. And it was very exciting. They don't inform you about everything, you know, just always. The corporate control of the planet and the banking system that causes all the wars, and now we really know the truth.
Indeed. And we've been talking with?
Bart Lee Christian.
Thank you, Bart. We're talking with... Glasses Man. Glasses Man, what do you got to say?
All right. We're just wondering about the riverfront over there behind Front Street.
On the levee, you mean? Or?
Yeah, the levee.
And you're wondering whether it's open or not?
Yeah. I went up there and saw that there's no signs, but it looks like people, it's all chopped down. It looks like people have been driving down there on the bottom part.
You know, that's an interesting question because I think those signs... Well, I think they put them up as a pretext. They still have them up as a pretext to get rid of different congregations of people and, of course, get rid of homeless campers. I don't know. I doubt they've changed the ordinance. I think it may be for tourist consumption. They don't want to see forbidden this, forbidden that everywhere. They want it supposed to be very friendly, you know, that sort of thing. But I don't know for sure, and one way to find out is you ask an official.
Yeah.
But, of course, then you might get a double talk story, too, but that might be one way to go, you know.
Right. Well, that's what I was wondering, because there's people that... There's apartments, condos all around there, so... I'm just wondering, are we welcome to go down there or not?
Well, they don't want to make everybody feel unwelcome, just you. That's the idea.
I think they say that the signs usually state that there's a no trespassing restoration in process.
But you're saying the signs have disappeared.
On this end, anyways, or behind the Front Street catering.
That may mean that they claim they've finished restoring. I don't know, though.
However, if they're missing, maybe it's because of the job that they did, hacking it all down, making it so barren. Maybe it's not a restoration anymore. Maybe that's considered a new growth. Or maybe it is more so. Maybe it's more...
Speculation abounds. We don't know.
Even more so now, it's...
Well, we've been talking with Glasses Man, and thank you very much for your thoughts on this. If we get any new info, I'll let you know.
And in fact, what Alex DeRosi, who did a photographic walk down the levee, I don't know, 4 or 5 months ago, and is a story posted on Santa Cruz Indie Media, indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, for those who haven't been there before, a good site to go to. A lot of the signs that have said, you know, no trespassing on this site have disappeared. And that does not mean, however, that the police aren't going to give you tickets for not being there. It's not been clear to me. In other words, I haven't gotten reports, oh, the police said it's fine, you can do that, or they can't. They said, no, you go down there, we'll still bust you. But what I think is that during the summer, there was this attempt to let tourists not feel that the entire area was being covered with no trespassing signs so as to make it seem a more welcoming area. But again, that's just my theory, my speculation. Dennis, you're a wiser man than I. What do you think about this? Or do you have any thoughts about this?
In reference to...
Signs that have disappeared from along the levee that used to say, no trespassing, reforestation in progress. Signs such as little yellow tape that's used to keep away people from being in an area when there doesn't seem to be any actual new plant growing happening, but it is a way of suggesting, get the fuck out of here, we don't want you on the levee.
I've seen the restoration signs and whatnot. They seem to be, you know, standard operating procedure. That doesn't, you know...
You mean for restoration or for exclusion?
In terms of, you know, just maintenance and whatnot of public ground, so that doesn't really faze me one way or another. But But as you say, they're no longer there to be seen.
Well, that's what those are the reports I got. That's one that Alex DeRosi reported too. And also, I mean, more important, if you look at, for example, places where they are still up, or one particular place right across from CVS, formerly Long's, the area right next to the Soquel Bridge, which is where the drum circle used to be.
Right,
there's still
this
area that is taped off, saying restoration area, and it's full of tumbleweeds.
Oh, well, they basically do use that as some sort of rationale for restricting space. I mean, I'm sure of that.
Yeah, see, that's what
they're going to go. They're going to go find those areas that are being frequented and used, and they're going to want to restore them, you know, to whatever state they
restore them to the blank area of homeless
what it would originally look like.
And whether we, but we, you know, you and I think that whether we have actual specific, I don't have specifics about specific areas, which would really be much more to the point and informative, because I think this kind of walling off of public space is, frankly, a criminal conspiracy against the public to deny them access to the land, which they need access to, but also specifically designed to harass a particular class of people, and that is even worse to me. I mean, you might say, well, the entire public gets harassed, so everyone's fairly treated, but people who live outside have far less options in terms of places they can go, particularly when they need to sleep at night, but that's another story. Let's hear a little more, and then pretty soon we'll go directly into the protests from Sunday, and of course, if you want to call in, you can. Phone lines are open, 831-427-3772. I'm in the studio with, I think his name is Dennis. I believe that's who you are.
Close.
And who you remain.
You should always come to the Huff meeting, and we can all talk about figuring out what to do or what the hell's going on. And who knows? Maybe we'll find out more. 11 o'clock every Wednesday, Sub Rosa Cafe.
Okay. Appreciate it.
Free coffee. Talking to Ms. B here.
I know my partner just beat Santa Cruz PD in court on a possession charge.
Possession of?
Methamphetamine.
And how did
that? Apparently, they don't know how to handle the chain of evidence. And the baggie they had wasn't his, and the weight they had wasn't enough, and what they had, they couldn't determine. So a year of taxpayers' time and money down the drain for a not guilty verdict.
But your man is out.
Oh, yeah. He's going to have to serve 6 days because he doesn't have his community service time signed off because he does shit because he wants to. You know, computer kitchen and River Street and stuff. He doesn't get any of it signed off, but he does a lot of it.
He does community service anyway.
Yeah.
Any new poetry for us, Madam Poet? It's been a while.
I don't know. You guys might have heard this one before. I know I don't laugh or smile as much as I cry, and I wander lost and ask why my children aren't by my side. Why men hide behind their pride, why hopes and dreams must die. I see us all steal and deceive, making ourselves believe better you than me. If it takes a village to raise a child, where do I go to find my village? Because everything I thought was good and loving, I have seen leveled and pillaged. And they tell me that being here itself is a privilege, and all I want to do is run from this place screaming. My soul is bleeding. My eyes no longer believe. My mind knows it's been deceived, shown things it just can't conceive. And apathy and a lack of integrity is like a fucking disease, and it's brought us all to our knees.
And we've been listening to the poetry of
Shannon B. B. and beyond. And for all those out there, you know, we almost had a homeless camp community going pretty damn good, and they said a lot of stuff in the paper about trash and confusion and chaos, but you know, we had 30 people living out there for 6 months.
Nasty's camp.
Yeah. And one OD. No hospitalizations or fights or stabbings or robbings or muggings. And if you compare the trash that they took to any neighborhood of 30 for 6 months, and half of that trash, at least 100 pounds of it, was my home till the day they came there and made us go.
Thank you, Mrs. Beam. Thank you.
never covered in a smoky haze. Sunday morning, the fire is out. Sunday morning, no one about. Get caked from there to here. Down the road, Route 25, they found this boy. He was buried alive. Jesus is on the wire, so far away, higher and higher. Jesus is on the wire. Ice, almost dead. They said that he slept with guys. They said that he deserved to die. Jesus is on the wire.
And that was Peter, Paul, and Mary singing a song from their album, In These Times. I think it's about 10 or 15 years old now, but don't know what it was about. Sounds like about the unjust death of a gay man. And we'll be hearing more from Peter, Paul, and Mary as we move along. Right now, however, we're going to hear from Robert, Becky, and probably Tanya, not to mention a number of assorted hosts. And actually, the hosts don't say anything. They like to keep a low profile, but there's a police officer involved and a lot of people who are on the sidewalk. This is the protest that happened last Sunday in front of Forever 21 called Funday Frolics, which sort of a jovial way of describing how ridiculous the downtown ordinances are in making it illegal to throw a frisbee, toss a ball, bounce a ball. Spit, not that spitting is a good thing to do, but making it a criminal offense. It becomes illegal to occupy more than 12 square feet if you have a table or you're playing music or you have anything with you that is, quote, capable of displaying or holding tangible things. Which sounds like almost anything that you would have, you would put down. And it's illegal to put down blankets and floppy things. I guess you could put down a cap, like the one you're wearing, Dennis, because it has a certain perpendicularity. But it's a, quote, freestanding device. So it's freestanding, but it's not terribly floppy. And I'm sure the police officers will make this very clear to you. It'll be a legal activity. Legal, not illegal. Anyway, here's some tape from that day, and it will eventually sig you into the hubbub around. There's been a lot of hubbub recently around the issue of the host who said fuck you and so forth and fuck off to activists, including Becky Johnson. And not just sort of as a free speech message, which one can understand, but as a form of threat, which is less condonable. But apparently it's okay with her boss, and it's okay with the police. And well, anyway, we're going to play some of that, and you'll be able to hear it. You can also you can call in with your comments. I did announce this show on the Santa Cruz Indie Media site, where you can actually see the video of what happened, at least part of what happened. Some are suggesting the video was cut and edited. It wasn't edited. There just wasn't much of it. And it wasn't Becky Johnson's video. It was someone else's video. I believe it was Tanya's video, a woman who showed up who has a real strong interest in seeing the free sidewalks restored instead of being sterilized and turned into what they're going to be turned into on October 24th. And apparently are already in that sort of condition, have been for some time, but this is a move against that. Anyway, let's hear some interviews. And Dennis, I just want to add, Dennis, that you patiently sitting here waiting through all this verbiage, or waiting through it, you saw the video of the, what would you call it, the fuck you incident? How's that way of putting it? There's nothing wrong saying fuck you. It's whoever says it. But if you're in a position of authority and you say it with intent to intimidate,
I think is antithetical to the whole concept of
the hospitality
hosts.
It is. But of course, the hosts are not really about that at all.
That's an oxymoron, what is, you know, relative to what they've done.
You know, I think, I don't want to, I mean, I think it is important that we go into this to some extent, but I think it's also important we remember what the real issues are, which are the broader issues of the fact that the ordinance is that these hosts snitch to the police on, frankly, to use bald language, and, you know, try to encourage you to abandon your rights in favor of, are really the topic that we have to consider that is this facing us, not just on October 24th, but today.
Yeah, well, the ordinance is a one thing, but this whole infrastructure, you know, this policing infrastructure, I think, is another concern that has to be addressed. What we're creating in this country now is a hierarchical sort of law enforcement structure. You know, the bottom levels of the pyramid are not under public control. I mean, we're basically hiring out, you know, people to basically take on duties that the police were traditionally assigned with. So I think that's something we really have to be concerned with.
Put that in other words for me, will you? It sounds pretty complex.
Okay. Well, we have public servants, as they're called. Those are the police, firefighters, and the like.
Uh-huh.
And there's some degree of accountability there.
Well, theoretically.
Not much, but theoretically, there's some degree of public accountability because, you know, they are employed by us, you know, the citizenry.
Nice to say that, yeah.
Yeah, but in terms of...
And if you get elected to city council, or you know, if you, in, you know, you're allowed to make Public Records Act requests and so forth.
And the sheriff, again, it's a public office.
Right. You can theoretically vote him out of office.
Right. So they are public servants, but beneath them, the tiers beneath them, well, you have what? You have these private security guards, right? And they have no supervision from the city or county, as far as I understand. One step lower, you have these hospitality hosts. And I read their job description. I did go on the web to try to find out somewhat more about, you know, the hospitality hosts and how they basically are employed and what they're tasked to do. And turns out that they are not employed by the city. People might be under the misapprehension that they are employed by the city.
Downtown Association.
Yeah. And, you know, they basically contracted out to a private firm.
You know what city they're located in?
No. You know, I found out the name. It's called Cali West Hospitality Services. And their trail, basically, they're, you know, on the web, leads to innumerable dead ends. there were a couple of stories in the Sentinel, and I posted this online, you know, to Facebook, you know, whatnot. there were a couple of stories about the hospitality hosts when they were basically initiated back in 2009 in the Sentinel. When I went to read those articles, I clicked on the link, and lo and behold, both articles said file not found. Very interesting. So I thought, well, what about other articles from that same day and year? Well, they loaded without any problem.
Cali West Hospitality Service, supposedly according to a poster on the article that we put, that was originally put up by Tanya, including this video that we're about to hear the audio of, is apparently the parent of this, of the hospitality, Gina Diane Ramirez.
That's the contact person. Can't find any information about
her. Is the contact
her.
Person who has actually filed, who has filed for the, she's the registered agent. It was, she filed on Wednesday, May 30th, 2012, according to this. And there's not a lot more at the moment.
There's very little. And most of the links that I attempted to access all came up with file error or file deleted. so they're very, very hard to track on the web and get any information whatsoever. Then we do have an address, which is 607 Front Street.
Which is a picture of it here on the Santa Cruz Indie Media website.
Which I took.
Which you took and posted. Now, is that very fair? Aren't you kind of exposing these people to...
Well, they don't have any signage. There's nothing at all identifying that address as...
Well, maybe they've moved. Did you ever think of that?
No, because they just basically had a training session there a couple of months ago.
Now, how do you know that?
Oh, that was on the web, on the Craigslist. They had it advertised that Craigslist.
So maybe you
list.
Could sneak into the training session and get trained.
Well, when I went to 607...
And then you too could be a Denise Miller-like person, assuming it is Denise Miller.
Maybe.
Not sure who actually this particular host was, but that was a suggestion of a reporter.
But the thing is, you know, this outfit, you know, seems to want to be incognito or incommunicado. I mean, they're very hard to track. To find out any information about them.
Well, you plan to be coming to this protest on Sunday, yeah?
I hope to.
At 1:30 in front of Forever 21.
Right.
I guess the plan is to do a tour of shame, which would go around the different places, including 607 Front Street, just to kind of, and also to walk with the hosts and see how they treat people, and maybe ask them a few questions about, you know, who pays them, who the parent organization is, where one can find information.
Well, see, the thing about, hospitality hosts, I was under the impression that they were there basically to help visitors and
greet
and,
the
and
tourists,
to,
yes.
To direct them to, you know, wherever destination they were planning to go.
Well, don't you know, tourists don't want to see these performers and musicians. They want to see expensive dresses at the Pacific Trading Company.
Right. They should be directing tourists to some of the performers and talking about,
oh, please. It's a flea market. It's a raggle-taggle band of trip and fall hazards,
right,
according to our city council.
I understand.
What seems to be your, I don't know what you're talking about.
But nonetheless, these hospitality hosts are tasked with basically not enforcing the ordinances, but promulgating them, basically advising people that they are committing an infraction against an ordinance. And I think that's
offending
just
the public order and morality.
Totally inappropriate task, given to these basically unauthorized people. I mean, they're not under any sort of public scrutiny. So why should they be performing that?
Well, that's one of the reasons why we're videoing them, I suppose, and audioing them ourselves, kind of performing our own bit of public.
So what do you have, again, going back to this idea of this four-tiered law enforcement infrastructure that we're developing? You have the paid police force at the top, then you have these private security guards, then you have, these so-called hospitality hosts.
Hostilipitality.
Right.
Yes.
And then at the very base, what do you have? You have the vigilante groups.
Well, citizen groups coordinating things.
Right. But these people all see themselves as a team. They work in conjunction with one another.
Mm-hmm.
You see police and security guards and hospitality hosts and probably some Take Back Santa Cruz people Basically hobnobbing with one another and fraternizing with one another.
Well, they're trying to establish safety and security downtown.
Well,
yes,
I think it more speaks of some form of collusion myself.
Well, naturally, they're cooperating in order to, shall we say, run the bad elements out of town.
So what you're getting is the classic sort of fascistic, repression, the mechanism for, that sort of repression.
Getting rid of your kind.
Is basically evolving right before our eyes. I mean, it's something to be very, very, concerned with, I think.
Well, let's actually hear at least the tape that was posted. This really is only 41 seconds long. I have a longer tape, but I think I'll wait till Sunday to try to play that because it's not terribly interesting, all of it. But let's see if we can hear this, and then we can hear comment some more.
Trying to record me.
Listen to the words.
Record all this.
Inspire me by life me.
Make sure you got this.
Encourage me by a woman that is respected as a queen. Not sexual objects right that they will try to take away.
And I didn't catch all
go
that.
Go ahead and tell me what they are today.
Is that what you said?
I didn't get your name. What's your name? Excuse me?
What was it?
Your name?
You think I have something against you? You approached me, ma'am. I didn't approach you. You approached
me. Get out of my face right now!
Get out of
my face,
fucking people! Get out of my face now!
Get out of my face!
Get out of my face! Get out
of my face! So I'm gonna play that again so we can kind of decipher the voices. You'll hear a man in the background kind of reciting poetry. That's Isaac Collins, a lyrical eye, who has had really nothing to do with this. He was on the curbside, kind of doing a poetic description of the impact of the downtown ordinances and other philosophical kind of lyrical aspects of things. The woman who is shouting is the host, and there are several other women who were shouted at, one of whom is Becky Johnson, who runs after the host to try to explain she wasn't trying to get in her face. The host approached her. She was simply trying to record what was going on. And Becky explained to me later, and actually we'll be hearing this, I guess, probably as an interview on this tape coming up, that she was the host approached her and informed her that the hopscotch matrix on the sidewalk in erasable chalk was a form of graffiti and an offense. And Becky asked if there had been a complaint. And the reason she asked this, so it's not clear, she told me later, was she has a bucket of water with her. And she was willing to actually, I think this might have been not the best thing to do, but willing to wash away the offense if somebody had complained. But the host did not say that anyone had complained. Instead, she said, "Are you recording me?" Because she saw Becky was obviously recording her, and Becky said, "Yeah." And so the host said, "Oh, I'll give you a, here are the set of rules," and she sort of walked off. Then she came back very angry, and that is what you're hearing now. You're hearing her, apparently she went off and she made a phone call, visibly at a distance, according to Becky. I didn't see any of this, or I saw it peripherally. I was doing other things. And so Becky went and sat down, and the host then came up to her, and this is the conversation that ensued. You cannot hear most of it really clearly, but you can hear some of it, and of course the end of it is very audible, where the host screams at her, "Get out of my fucking face," and so forth. What Becky's trying to do, as well as her companion, is to get her to give her name, because she has not only used abusive language toward Becky, but she's also threatened her. And this kind of behavior, coming from anybody is bad news, but coming from a person in an official position is even worse, because they have the whole force of authority behind them in downtown Santa Cruz. Well, what's your thought on this, Dennis? Anything additional you want to add?
Well, it's outrageous. I mean, a hospitality host should not be trying to, if not enforce ordinances, but be a party to their implementation. I mean, what authority does she have for that? I mean, it's not anything that's been vested in her by the public, unless maybe delegated by the police department in some fashion. I have no idea. I mean, how do you find out, maybe, you know, what are the parameters within which these hospitality hosts can operate within? I mean, where do you get that
information? Well, I mean, you're actually taking it a step further. I would even if you grant that they have a legitimate, I don't think it's really legitimate, but they conceive of their function as telling people, you know, you're violating this law, and if you...
Well,
if you,
I don't think they should be in a position to judge whether a law is being violated. If anything, they should just pass out that...
Every member of the community has a right to determine whether someone else is violating a law, anybody who wants to, if I see you doing something that I think is illegal, I can call a cop I can then make a citizen's arrest, even if the police officer doesn't see it, based on my testimony.
Well, I understand
that's
all
what
that.
These hosts are all about.
Right, but I don't think that they should be tasked with, you know, that type of activity.
That's exactly what they have been tasked with for the
that's
last...
That's what I'm saying they shouldn't be, you know.
For the last 19 years, more
bounds,
or less.
You know, in terms of what the function of a hospitality host should be.
Well,
a
hospitality...
They're an auxiliary to the police.
A hospitality is the cover story. What they really are is they're a private... unpaid, cheap private security force.
Right. They're a police auxiliary.
They're the eyes and ears of the police force.
The main thing
I think that people are noting online, and there are over 100 comments on the different websites about this, is that, you know, she didn't approach Becky Johnson, who's the person you'll hear her talking at, with a, here's a ticket, here's a citation. The first time she said, she gave her some information that she'd been...
And that should have been it.
But this time she reproached her
because she was angry
that she was being, not videoed, but in Becky's case, audio recorded. Mm-hmm. She felt this was somehow a violation of her something. And moreover, a personal attack on her. Now, this may show...
The question is, how are these people trained? I mean, what are the parameters that they're given in terms of how...
You know, I don't even want to go there, because what I notice is not so much that, because that's always the excuse given. When they shoot someone dead on the street, oh, we'll give them better training. You know,
I'm not interested in that.
Yeah.
I'm saying we have no idea whether they have any training whatsoever, which I'm sure they have very little.
I don't care. I mean, suppose they have the most immense amount of training. The real question to me is, once they... blow it in this fashion, once she starts cursing and threatening someone...
Well, she should never be in a position to do that.
Once she does that, well, that's nice. But, you know, people do what they do.
It's an inappropriate action. She should be discharged.
Well, and I'm not even going to talk about that. But I'm going to say that once she does that, first of all, she has to be accountable for it.
Exactly.
If they won't even give her name...
Right.
Which, of course, is what police...
If
the host superior won't give her name, we're going to hear that.
That's the whole point I'm trying to make. I mean, since they are not public servants, the hospitality hosts are employed by a private agency.
But it's not just a public servant. If anybody else in town had engaged in this kind of behavior, the police officer would have gotten the name of both parties and taken a citizen's arrest. My point is that this process that's really we have to learn from is not so much that it happened that the host blew her cool, that the host is acting inappropriately. There's no question about that. But how are her superiors acting? What happens next? That's the real issue for me.
No, I agree with that.
Call it. Hi there. You're on Free Radio with the host monitors, Robert and Dennis.
And David Silva here.
Hey,
David Silva. I was there when that officer attacked Becky that way. I was shocked.
Wait a minute.
But, I'm not surprised.
Officer, do you mean the officer or do you mean the host?
Say what?
Do you mean the officer or do you mean the host?
The host.
Okay, good. Because there's an officer
that
shot up later.
And screaming and so on. My theory is, Robert, is that the police have finally got tired of having to face cases of constitutionality and treating us, you know, respecting the Bill of Rights, and they're basically contracting out so they can farm away our rights.
Exactly.
And that's what I'm witnessing, and that's what I'm seeing on the streets of Santa Cruz, and the whole city needs to be in shame and rise up. This is too much. Too much. It's ridiculous.
So, David, what exactly did you see on that Sunday?
Well, we were just standing there, you know, handing out pieces of flyers and literature, you know, just as peaceful as can be. And next thing I know, this guard is telling Becky to move on, and just comes at her, first she threatens her, and then she walks off. So Becky says, oh, "Ma'am, did you just threaten? You know, what was that threat?" And Becky repeats the threat. It was a horrible threat. No regular police officer would do. But, you know, since they're contracted out, they have special, you know, rights to violate our Constitution. Excuse them, fuck them, wah.
So what exactly did you hear? How close were you to this conversation?
Oh, Robert, I'm not the person that you need to be asking about exactness. I understand Becky's going to be calling into your show tonight. She'll tell you the actual details. I have such bad memory problems, but I was there. I had the experience, and I am shocked. Santa Cruz, wake up.
Okay, thank you, David.
Well, no, I agree exactly with what David's saying. I mean, these hosts...
Yeah, but you weren't there, you know. Come
on. I wasn't there, but, I mean, he was, and I could see the video, and I've seen them in action.
I'd like to get clear witness testimony of what happened, and that's unfortunate.
Right, but what I'm getting at is David's observation that, you know, that we're dealing with contract, you know, law enforcement, an auxiliary to the police that is unaccountable.
Well, let's hear this again one more time, and then we'll start listening to some more of the protests generally. And who knows, maybe we'll get a call from the victim, Becky Johnson, or one of the victims. She may call in. I don't know if she's going to, but we'll see if she does. Here's this. Let's see. Can we do it again? Let me go back here. All right, here we go.
You're in my face and trying to record me.
Listen to the words.
Record all this.
Inspire me by life me.
Make sure you got this.
Encourage me by a woman that is respected as a queen. Not sexual object that they will try to take away.
And I didn't catch all
that. Go ahead and tell me what they are then.
Is that what you said?
I didn't get your name. What's your name? Excuse me? What's your name?
You think I have something against you? You approached me, ma'am. I didn't approach you. You approached
me. Get out of my face right now! I'm with you fucking people. Get out of my face now!
Hey.
And that was 41 seconds of a video. So I'm going to play some more interviews now, unless you got something you want to say, Dennis. You may have already said it. But.
No, I think it's all been said.
All right, well, let's hear some more from the actual the protest, because there's some people, other people had stuff to say about these issues. It's all very exciting, the emotional, you know, somebody, you know, the host screwed up. There's no question about it. You know, the question, though, is, you know, what happens 99% of the time when the host is more moderate and mellow? It's equally abusive as far as I'm concerned. Anyway, here's a caller, and callers come first. Hey there, caller.
Hi, this is Becky Johnson.
Oh-ho! Have you been swearing at the hosts again, Becky Johnson?
I think it was kind of the other way around.
So it appears. Actually, if people want to see the video, they should go and check it out on YouTube or on the... Best thing to do is go to the Indie Bay website. Have you posted it somewhere, Becky, yourself? Where do you suggest people go to look at it?
Well, I did post a comment below the... Tanya actually posted it
on Santa Cruz Indie Media. Yeah,
On Indie Media. So you can find the link there.
Uh-huh.
And you want to hear what happened?
For sure, blow by blow.
Well, I had decided to do some hopscotching. We had our box of crime there, and part of that is to suggest that all these fun things are gone from Pacific Avenue. You can't hacky sack, you can't play with the ball, you can't blow bubbles, you can't hacky sack. So I had the sidewalk chalk decided to do, so this I drew this chalk matrix on the sidewalk, and I titled it Hopscotch for the First Amendment, because I think that this chalk writing has something to do with the First Amendment. And I was midway through making this hopscotch matrix when the host approached me, and she just told me that the chalk on the sidewalk, by making a mark were constituted graffiti, and that I could be cited for it.
Now she didn't raise her voice or anything at that point, right?
No.
And she wasn't rude or obscene or threatening at that point.
She was very officious.
Right. Okay.
And I wanted to ask her if there'd been a complaint, but she had already walked off. And she walked about 30 feet away, and she went over and stood right next to Forever 21.
Let me interrupt you, Becky, and ask you, why did you ask her if there had been a complaint? What was your motivation there? What was in your mind?
Well, these ordinances, the intent of the ordinances from when they were passed at City Council was just to provide warnings for people, and that they didn't really want to fight them, and they just wanted to
respond to complaints.
Only on complaint, if there had been a complaint. But what's happened now is the police go up and tell people, well, like say the move along law. Used to be, and if anyone has a problem that the person being there too long, then the cops can go up and tell them that they have to move in an hour. But now they said, oh, well, the police can just tell you you have to move in an hour, even if there hasn't been a complaint.
Mm-hmm.
And again, with the chalking on the sidewalk, apparently chalking on the sidewalk is something that's done from time to time, and rarely does it result in a citation. As I have I've never found a citation for chalk around any street other than Pacific Avenue in the entire history of the city of Santa Cruz, even though the ordinance is supposed to be enforced citywide. So there is a special kind of selective enforcement being done on Pacific Avenue.
Now, one question I had, and I guess I mentioned this earlier, if you're listening to the show, you might have heard this, is that it was my understanding that you were ready, you had a bucket of water, you were ready to erase the chalk matrix. Tell me if I'm wrong about this.
I had two plastic gallons of water, and you see what happens if they decide they're going to cite you, they send this guy out, and he takes a photo of it. And then he washes the sidewalk, and you're billed for that. So if you have the water and it gets in a situation where they're going to be cited, as long as you wash it away before the guy comes out and takes the picture, then there's no evidence of any damages. So it's sort of a tactic to avoid prosecution.
If
someone complained, I'd have the option of removing it.
It sounds like an attempt to, in some sense, although you're right, it's to avoid prosecution. It may also be an attempt to meet the those who are, you know, justify such ordinances and such police and host activity halfway by saying, is there actually a complaint about this? And I had thought perhaps you would even be willing to wash it away if there were a complaint, but it sounds like you weren't really prepared to go that far. It was more an attempt to just say, look, we'll it's not ridiculous. You're going to spend money on the courts even though we washed it away. Come on, give us a break. Is that fair? Is that fair to say?
When you understand how their process works, you can throw the little wrench in the clockworks of it. And that's the weak point in the prosecution of sidewalk art on Pacific Avenue, is they've contracted out to this guy called Coyote Industrials, and he shows up and washes it away, and then he bills the city. And in court, you're hit with the bill.
Mm-hmm.
But if you are able to
to do it yourself, then that
circumvent that,
right,
process,
the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. And a couple gallons of water could do that easily.
Fair enough. So I interrupted you. Please proceed then with what happened. You said the host went over to the side to make a phone call of some kind?
Okay. The host walked off. She went over and stood next to Forever 21 in the exact same spot where Officer stood for hours at her last protest. And she turned and she faced me directly, and she took her phone out and called on her phone. while and was talking on her phone while looking at me. And I believed that she was calling for backup. You know, I could be wrong, but that was my impression of what she was doing. So I got my tape recorder out, my audio recorder, and I walked over to her and held it out in front of her so that she could see it and so I could get a good recording of whatever she said. And I asked if there had been a complaint. And she took offense that I was recording her. And she asked, are you recording me? And I said, yes. And so she didn't answer me about whether there was a complaint or not. Instead, she just handed me the little brochure of downtown ordinances and advised me to read it. And then she turned around and walked away. She was on the phone the whole time. I presumably up the street so she could continue her conversation in private. I didn't follow her. I went back to hopscotching, actually, and had kind of a fun game there on the sidewalk with the hopscotch. No one complained. Some people seem to kind of appreciate it, enjoy it. Then Isaac Lyrical Eye Collins, the street poet, he was performing there. He'd been performing at our last protest as well because he's one of the people who are subject to elimination from the avenue with these new ordinances. And
you can hear his
performing.
You can hear his voice throughout the video. It's kind of actually it overpowers both that of you and the host often. So,
a man with a baby went over and he sat down on the right next to Forever 21 to watch Isaac, and it was really make the most logical place to sit to watch a performance where you wouldn't obstruct the sidewalk. There are no access doors into Forever 21 on that side of the building. Only it's way over on the corner, several feet away, maybe 20 feet away. And he sat down with this baby, and I went and I sat down next to him. And then another man came and sat down next to me. So I went, oh, great, we got a sit-in going, you know, because that's something that the police cite homeless people for, sitting on the sidewalk less than 14 feet from a building, which is what we were doing. And then this host walked back up to me, and she bent down, and she said, you know, when you were audio recording me, you fucked with the wrong person. I'm telling you right now, you fucked with the wrong person. And I was, like, really shocked, and took it as a threat that she planned to do something about it, that she's going to come back at me later on with either to get me arrested or cited or something. And maybe she'd be violent. Maybe she'd vandalize my car. I don't know what she might do, but I certainly interpreted it as a threat. And I was struggling with getting my audio recorder on so I could tape her words. But she, about the time I got it working, she was walking off. So I followed her and I asked her, I said, what was that you said? What was that you said? You're fucking with the wrong person? Is that what you said? You're fucking with the wrong person. Well, you can hear what I'm saying on both. And it was at that point that I realized that it was also being video recorded because this woman, Tanya, was walking with her, and she was asking, what's your name? And by the way that she acted that, you know, that I had fucked with the wrong person, like I was singling her out
The way the host acted. Go ahead.
Yes. Because of her statement, but I interpreted that she thought I was singling her out for some kind of punishment. And so I said, you know, you approached me. I didn't approach you. I was just doing peaceful things, hopscotching, sitting down on the sidewalk, listening to a street artist, handing out literature. You know, I was a citizen enjoying the downtown, my community, as I ought to be able to do. And she, under color of law, really, with her position as being some sort of security personnel on Pacific Avenue, had abused her authority by making this very, very open and hostile threat towards me in unprofessional language and with a venom and ferocity that truly frightened me. And I'd say it was probably a good half hour later before my adrenaline level went back down to normal, because I was so unnerved by the whole incident. It was just the viciousness of it, the hostility, and these threats, the open threat that she made to me.
So, and I'm going to be playing my audio tape, which, you know, you might want to call in again, or you might want to continue talking about it now. Mm-hmm. I didn't see this incident. I was across the street with my sign, "This will be illegal on October 24th, which next to the didgeridoo player, whose space will be completely eliminated in front of New Leaf Market. But I was concerned that both hosts, both the woman who did this at the time and then the woman who came, who turned out to be, I'm told by the Santa Cruz Weekly reporter who was actually there, her name was, the name of the host's boss at this point was Gina Ramirez, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
She refused to give her name. None of them had name tags. And when officer, and I guess first alarm security people were clustering around, not knowing what to do, one or two of them. And then there was the Officer Albert who showed up. And he agreed to take a report, but he would, if I'm not mistaken, and correct me if I'm wrong, decline to make a citizen's arrest. Is that your recollection or not?
Well, I'm unclear about these fine distinctions, a citizen's arrest, a complaint, a report, you know, an investigation. I thought he was investigating whether a crime had been committed.
I'm sure that may have been, you know, what he was doing, but normally when an officer is called, for example, by a downtown host or by, you know, a business person or by a well-dressed middle-class person, I'm not suggesting you're not well-dressed, but you are there as an activist. The cop's response is to write a citation immediately. And that citation, mm-hmm. that, you know, and it goes to the person.
And let the judge sort it out, yeah.
Yeah, and
yeah,
so.
Yeah, they declined to do that.
And that's what's called a citizen's arrest. And it's usually done, they usually says, he says to the person who's called him, would you like to make a citizen's arrest? And the person says yes or no. At any time, did the officer ask you that question?
No. I did ask to file a complaint both with a first alarm security guard and then later with Officer Albert, and both of the security guard said, oh, the hosts, they're a whole different group, you know, they're different, we don't have anything to do with them. He's like disassociating from the hosts. And then Officer Albert, when I said I want to file a complaint, he said, well, I'm not really sure that crime has been committed. I just want to get all the information before I do that. But I know from my long experience here in Santa Cruz that if a homeless person had come up to a shopper or something and screamed at them, you fucking with the wrong person, you fuck with the wrong person, and frightened them like that, that, and then they tried to call the police, that person would be probably arrested and taken into custody for a terrorist threat.
Yeah, and of course, so I mean, at least there will have been some inquiries.
Or fighting words. Fighting words is another possibility.
Disturbing
also
the peace.
Misdemeanor.
Yeah. No, or assault, you know, because you were put in fear of, you know, that something
was going
to happen.
It was a verbal assault with a threat of violence or wrongdoing later on.
And there's absolutely no accountability, apparently, because you don't have any idea how to even file a complaint with whom. And, you know, the police weren't going to give you any lead on how to go about doing that. So, I mean, this whole operation is totally unaccountable.
It's a dark operation.
And, you know, Robert, the thing that I took away from this whole incident, this is what hosts and cops do to homeless people all the time. Homeless people who may be sitting on a sidewalk. Maybe they're begging instead of, like me, I'm housed. I wasn't begging. But when a homeless person is sitting there and they are begging and then the hosts come up and treat them that way, they don't get any, they don't have any recourse for that. We as a city shouldn't be paying people to be cruel in that way, to be mean and to be threaten, you know, violence or incarceration in that way. There's something really, really wrong when the hosts feel that they can treat people that way and get away with it.
No, I think it's great the way they're treating people, and I think they should be beating up every third homeless person. I'll get them out of town. Actually,
homeless people are the canaries in the mine shaft. When homeless people start losing their rights, the rest of the people's rights will be lost too.
Yeah, I don't know if that's true, but I think it's worth considering. I know that's the old, you know, when they came for the Jews and so on. You know, they came for the socialists, and I wasn't into it. In other words, it could also be true.
Well, they're certainly trying to drive protesters off of Pacific Avenue.
Well, that's
legislatively.
Legislatively, for sure. We're talking with Becky Johnson, who was, you can see her on the video on YouTube under, I guess, Santa Cruz Hostility is where you should look to find it on YouTube, or go to Santa Cruz Indie Media and look for the top story on the right of the corner of the Santa Cruz Indie Media. Santa Cruz Indie Media can be found under indiebay.org/Santa Cruz or Santa Cruz Independent Media. If you go to Santa Cruz Indie Media, you'll find an old site. So go to, I think it's Santa Cruz Independent Media or indiebay.org/Santa Cruz. Since I've got you online, Becky, and I have Dennis in the studio, something else is happening tonight, which is a Sanctuary Campground Forum, which is being sponsored by, well, organized by Brent Adams, Stacy Falls, I believe her name is, and a number of other people. One of the speakers is Councilmember Michael Posner, Paul Lee, and then I think it's somebody from out of town from a homeless encampment that's in the valley. What's your reaction to that, Becky? Are you going to be going to that? Do you have any thoughts about that? I invited Brent to call in. I got an email shortly before the show saying that he was too busy, but that he would expect to see me there. And I indeed may well probably go down there because I've got some flyers I want to distribute about this upcoming protest, which I assume you're going to be coming to this Sunday at 1:30 called Tour of Shame.
I'm planning on coming to this Sunday thing. I probably won't be at the Sanctuary Camp meeting at Santa Cruz High School. I think it should have already started by now.
It did. It started, I think, around 7.
It's in the main auditorium inside Santa Cruz High.
Uh-huh.
It makes sense that, especially since we've had all these homeless sweeps of encampments and areas that haven't been... I really don't ever remember as many organized sweeps of... green belt and parkland areas as have occurred in the last year. As they're displacing homeless people from the places that they have taken to find shelter, they have to offer them someplace else to go. And Sanctuary Camp would be that somewhere else to go.
For 100 of them.
I've always thought that campgrounds are like an immediate solution available to us here in Santa Cruz. We have over 2,000 acres of parkland, green belt, and open space. Surely we can find 2 or 3 acres somewhere for a homeless campground where homeless people could go and have set up a tent and be able to start organizing their lives again. We live in an earthquake area, so it's very, very expensive to build any kind of structure, and as it should be, because we want all of our public buildings and private buildings to be safe in an earthquake. but a campground is, you know, that's a perfectly acceptable way of providing shelter for people. Even if they only did it on a 9-month basis when the armory is open, that would be a huge benefit. Although I believe camping can be done in this area on a year-round basis.
Dennis, you have any thoughts?
Well, no, I agree completely, and I'm going to head over there, you know, momentarily. So, no, there's definitely a need. One other comment just to be made, apparently there are some pretty well-established camps that have been established by homeless citizens themselves, as you were mentioning earlier, and I think it would be appropriate to try to make those camps more viable, you know, so that people could go in and help them truck their garbage and other materials out. You know, otherwise, you know, they're not in a position to do it themselves. Well, why not try to, you know, establish some of these camps rather than, you know, have the cops go in and sweep them away? There should be an effort to, you know, to support them, not abolish them.
They make so much sense. When we had the Coral Street Open Air Shelter, and by the way, I was on the board of directors of the organization that ran that, it was set up for 75 people, but we were inundated with people from all over who were coming out of illegal campsites all through the Poganip and Moore Creek and in De La Viega. They came down and set up their tents on this little tiny piece of ground because it was legal. So we stopped a lot of environmental damage by setting up one tiny campground for about 2 years. And at its height, we had 225 people living there. And no one died. People told me that they were able to get their lives together. And when the camp was destroyed, their lives were destroyed likewise.
It would have been much better if that had been somehow supported by the powers that be, and sort of normalize it and make it into a functioning sanctuary camp.
You know, it was, because it wasn't something that the homeless people set up. It was done kind of by, initially by an agreement between Karen Gillette, who did a thing called the Free Meal, and then the Homeless Community Resource Center, and Police Chief Michael Dunbow, I should say Deputy Police Chief Michael Dunbow, who set up a sort of a tolerated campground at what was then called the Back 40 and what is now the Page Smith Community House property at Coral and River Streets. And then homeless people themselves decided to start keep the tents up during the day, and they established a group called SOS, Save Our Shelters. And there was a large rain that did flood the camp at one point. The Citizens Committee for the Homeless only provided two porta-potties, Becky Johnson. And although I know you're not responsible for it yourself, that was your board, I guess, that made that.
I was on that board of directors. I saw those budgets. I was at those meetings where internal discussions were going on.
Uh-huh.
The city provided no funding for the Coral Street Open Air Shelter, and our organization continued for almost 2 years trying to piece together funding for that. It was difficult until it was the point that our other programs were going to have to be discontinued for lack of financial support, and that's why the plug was pulled on the Coral Street Open Air Shelter, not because of weather, not because of overcrowding or sanitary problems, but because the city refused to provide any funding, and they wanted the campground to fail.
You know, it's just hard. I hear you, Becky, and I went to those meetings. Paul Lee tried to exclude me from some of those meetings, and that was never used as an excuse that I heard. What they said instead was they were about to start the Page Smith Community House, which wasn't true. They didn't start it for another year and a half. And, of course, Kennedy and Rotkin, the two city council members most instrumental in destroying the campground, you know, told everybody to leave and actually, you know, pack them off for 2 weeks to New Brighton Beach and then dump them. I guess, you know.
And Catherine Byers organized the task force to examine the camping ordinance.
That was 6 years later, Becky.
Reoccupying that ground.
That was 6 years later. That was in 1999. But there was a move. People then moved to City Hall and held an 8.5 long City Hall sleepers vigil protest.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, but I mean, it seems to me that Ed Fry has shown that for $100 a month you can rent a porta potty. You know, and it's hard to believe the Citizens Committee for the Homeless couldn't find more than $200 a month for two porta potties. I mean, that's, and plus, of course, Karen Gillette's Homeless Community Resource Center refused to allow them to use the bathrooms that were available there. And, you know, there could have been extra funding gone into those. But this was a city, and in a way, tolerated and supported campground that wasn't like we heard Mrs. B, Shannon B, the poet, talk about Nasty's campsite. That's the name of the guy whose campsite was destroyed by police and deputies a month ago, where essentially they went in and they stole all the marijuana that was growing there, which people were using as a cash crop, and were growing it with medical marijuana cards. They didn't arrest anybody for anything because everybody had marijuana cards. They just stole all the marijuana and destroyed the campsite and told everyone to go. That was a homeless-run campground. And in Fresno, similar things are happening now. Encampment after encampment is being destroyed, and these are encampments in a city where there are hundreds of thousands. I don't know. I think Fresno has a couple million people. I'm not sure exactly how big it is. A big city. And these are, of course, campsites that the homeless have themselves set up.
Robert?
Mm-hmm.
You know, our organization, HUF, our position is that any person who's displaced by one of these suites should be given a voucher for a motel room, like that night. And unless they're willing to do that, they shouldn't be sweeping these people out of there. They're there by necessity. There's people who have fallen through the cracks.
Dennis,
95% of them don't want to be there.
Right. Dennis is about to take off for the Sanctuary Campground meeting, so we can get a report from him later.
Linda LeMaster has gone there as well.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Dennis.
Thanks for having me.
We'll have you again one of these days. Thank you, man.
Okay.
And Becky, thank you. Feel free to, I'm going to start playing some more of the tape from our protest, and we're going to actually get into some of that. I don't know how much we're going to have time for.
You might consider playing the little audios that I made that I sent to you.
I can try and do that, although I sometimes have trouble unloading them during airtime. But I'm certainly going to post them as I continue to promise.
I just thought they'd be relevant to play on this show.
Well, let me see if I can do that. And while I'm doing that, I'll play some of the other interviews. And feel free to call back if you have any comments on that.
Sure. Thanks, Robert.
Thank you for calling in. And you're tuned to the stream of Free Radio, freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norris. The name of the show, Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. You're probably listening to a taped version, unless you're listening on October 13th or an audio file. And we'll see how that goes. Let's hear some more interviews from the Fun Day Frolics from last Sunday, which we're going to have another tour of shame, essentially a protest against the sidewalk snatching downtown. And let's take a listen.
So it is about 2:15 on October 6th. I'm down here at the corner of Soquel and Pacific at the Fun Frolicsome Fun Day. I'm not sure what we're calling this event, but it's tables on the sidewalk, and someone's drawing a hopscotch matrix over there illegally, and we have talking to us an individual who's concerned about music in town.
I'm sad to say that most of the indie music scene in this town has vanished because they had a lot of home shows, and the police constantly hassled kids having home shows of indie music. We only have one indie music venue left, and that's the Crepe Place, and it's managed really nicely by Keith, but there may still be some hidden underground.
Switching to slow speed.
A great indie music scene here, thanks to being Hassel.
What were the previous indie media?
You mean like the home shows?
Right.
Yeah, home shows and not very many, because we don't have very many venues here for the young people's music. We have the Catalyst, but it's very select, you know, music. It's not really...
And you say that some kind of city council pressure has cracked down on independent music?
Yeah, because neighbors complain because there's music going on.
No hopscotching downtown, sir.
Yeah.
That's a crime. We're trying to keep a peaceful Santa Cruz here. You're going to alarm the merchants.
Sorry, go ahead.
I'm just going to say that neighbors complain because they can hear music in their neighborhood. And that's such a sinful thing, considering that young people just thrive on music. But, you know, one evening of some music. It's, you know, what can I say? I mean, in San Francisco, they freak out because there's a music festival in Golden Gate Park for 3 days.
They should. I mean, after all, this brings the wrong element to our kind. Needles. It brings needles. Needles, you hear? Needles everywhere.
Well, yeah.
It's frightening.
Yeah.
It's frightening. That's what it is.
It is. Well, anyway, that's my speech, is that I'm sad to see what's happened to music for young people in our community.
And your name is?
Linda.
And you lived here for how long?
Since 1992.
You're a new timer. You don't know what's going on around here. I mean, come on, give yourself time. We have a hopscotch matrix that has been drawn by a criminal citizen here. Hopscotch is hopscotch for the Fifth Amendment. And we start here, a place you can begin your hopscotching. And we have a host, which is apparently, let's say, one of the little yellow jackets. Becky, what just happened to you?
The host came up and told me that chalking on the sidewalk is graffiti and I could be cited for it.
Uh-huh.
And so I went over and asked her if there was a complaint.
Right.
And she says, oh, you have to read the ordinance. She gave me the copy of the ordinances.
She didn't say there was a complaint.
Well, you can hear what she had to say. I recorded it. Mm-hmm. Hold on, I got it.
So we're waiting while the phone is dialing up the recording of the perspicacious host.
I was wondering, was there a complaint about the hopscotching?
Okay, let me explain to you. That is a form of graffiti, so that is not allowed. Are you recording me?
Yes, I am.
Okay, well, here, let me give you the city ordinance guide that can help you out.
I know, I've been convicted under it twice.
Okay.
But I'm asking you, what is my remedy for hopscotching? Can I write a hopscotch board on a piece of paper and pass it out to people?
Maybe
perhaps
that'll work.
I could publish
it. Maybe that'll work for you. Why don't you study that?
Yeah, shall I tell you all the errors in it, ma'am? You don't even know your own laws.
Did you get some of that on?
He walked away then at that point.
Oh, dear. Well, what... So I'm talking with a local here. You're a local. What's your name?
I am a local. My name is Georgia Perry.
And Georgia, you say you yourself were innocently sipping coffee when you were accosted?
I would not say accosted.
Approached?
I approached.
Advised?
Approached and advised works. Yeah, I was sitting by the New Leaf. I was...
position here if you're interested.
I was right on the curb having a coffee. An officer just walked by and said, ma'am, I know you're just trying to sit and relax, but you actually need to be 14 feet from the street. And I was not 14 feet from the street. But I had never heard that before, and I sit there.
Where were you exactly?
I was like, see where that person's bike is? Just on... how the New Leaf has like the seating area, but then right outside of it, I put like my back up against it, which is on the ground.
You have to be.
I was right by the street.
According to the current forbidden zones, you have to be 14 feet from a crosswalk.
Yeah, it was a crosswalk.
Kiosk.
So I was in violation of the crosswalk because it's that one right there.
You have to be more careful about these things. You know, luckily, now you'll be warned at forearmed.
Not permitted within 14 of the following: building or fence, street corner or intersection, sidewalk, cafe or kiosk. Oh, I think you may have been less than 14 feet from a kiosk.
Yes, if I mean
bench. You can't sit 14 feet from a bench. Directory sign, drinking fountain, public trash compactor, sculpture. Here's the statues that I say have more rights than people. Or payphone.
Although,
I don't know where.
What's your name?
Nancy.
And Nancy, this upsets you?
This makes me mad.
Now, why does this make you mad?
Because this is a street, and musicians make the street.
I agree. Thank you, Nancy.
Robert?
We're talking with
Jane Jeffer.
And Jane, you're from San Luis Obispo, and you've recently been a UCSC student, or that was a while ago?
A recent UCSC graduate.
And here you are, stopping in front of the stand because you were hailed over, accosted. Have you looked over any of the literature? Have you come to any thoughts on any of it?
This is my first encounter with
Have it. You been around town much?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
What do you think of the idea of cutting back on performance spaces, light places to sit? Do you feel safe downtown? You're an attractive woman, you presumably are more vulnerable. That's what the Public Safety Committee seems to be intimating, or some people are. Have you felt unsafe downtown?
No, rarely do I feel unsafe, especially in the downtown area, and I appreciate the space that is allotted here for free expression, and it's something that I often come downtown specifically for.
Well, watch your step in the future, madam. That's all I can tell you. What kind of work do you do, if anything?
I work on the backcountry trail crew in Yellowstone National Park.
You did before they closed it down?
Yes, I'm currently on furlough indefinitely until the government, is not shut down anymore. Mm-hmm.
So have you ever had any problems with police here in terms of these ordinances or some other instance?
Let's see, a few years ago, some friends of mine and myself were involved with kind of the parking lot law where, you could only...
Parking lot panic law, as I used to call it.
Uh-huh. I was very much against that.
Can I deal with that through my number email?
Sure.
Really, really shiny.
I never had any negative interactions with the police, but it was something that just from brief encounter with this stand is reminding me of that, and sort of an effort to limit spaces where people can gather without spending money.
Yeah. Look it over, see if you agree. If you agree with this idea, the petition is more of a form than a substance, because the city council has, in fact, made its decision. It passed the law, and the law will become law on the 24th for sure. That which means at that time, you will be subject to a $200 to $300 fine for doing sitting next and down virtually on anywhere on the sidewalk, unless you bring your own chair. If you bring your own chair, it's legal. So carry your chair with you. That's my suggestion.
And I'm going to stop this at this point because we're kind of running out of time here. And I did find the audio files that Becky Johnson sent my way. It's... I'm jumping the gun a little bit, but not really, because we've talked about this issue and played the audio of the rather shocking video that's been gone kind of viral on the internet, or at least part of the internet. This is we're going to play two different reports from Becky's audio, which she picked up presumably on her portable device. Let's hear. This is her attempting to make a report, and this is how that goes.
Almost careful, you know, to get back up now.
Hello. Hi, my name is Becky. I was just accosted by a downtown host. She swore at me. She screamed at me. She yelled at me. She accused me of having something out for her when I was just sitting there, and she approached me. I'd like to file a complaint.
Okay. Now, would you like the police here to take a report, or do you want to call hospitality and file a complaint with the manager of hospitality?
Perhaps you could listen to this and...
That is one of the audio files. And I actually may have more of that because I was recording more of it. Let's see if there's anything further. Again, we're kind of running up against the clock here. But let's see. Let's try. This is the second audio file that I have. And let's see how we're doing here.
I didn't catch up.
Do you say I'm fucking with the wrong person? Is that what you said? You said I'm fucking with the wrong person? What was that all about? You think I have something against you? You approached me, ma'am. I didn't approach you. You approached me.
Get out of my face right now! I had it with you fucking people. Get out of my face now!
You should quit, lady. You're in the wrong profession.
And that indeed was Becky Johnson on last Sunday responding to the rather angry outburst of one of the hosts downtown. I'll be back on Sunday right before the next demonstration. Uncle Dennis is here, of course, with his usual bottle of booze as well as... and he's got some other implements. Probably some criminal activity is about to take place. I can't really speculate yet.
The whole station is a criminal activity.
And it would be nice if we actually could go on the air and really be a criminal activity. Dennis may have a few words about that, suggestions on how to deal with that issue.
We need a transmitter site.